Hi everyone, it's Lydia here. Before we jump into this episode, I want to give a little bit of information on why I feel like this topic is so relevant and so important. I'm nearly 33, and lately I've been thinking a lot about aging. I know that I'm not old, but I'm really thinking about, you know, the fine lines, and I can see them starting to settle. I found myself recently comparing myself a lot more than I ever have in my life. Like, do I look good? Do I look good for my age? What does someone my age even look like now when all I see is filters and Botox and all these different options? The thing is that we're getting older in a really strange time in culture, I think. There's so many options now available, promising you to stay young forever. And sometimes it can make you feel almost a little bit silly for not doing that stuff when it is so readily available. And I've been talking about aging a lot with my friends. People are trying out different things. And in one of those conversations, a friend of mine said something that really made me stop and think. She said, when I hear some of these conversations, especially online, talking about aging, I feel how lucky these people are because I think their lives haven't been touched by grief. She said that once you have experienced grief, everything changes and you really realize that age is a privilege. And she's right, age is a privilege. It's a sign we're still here, we're living, we're becoming more of ourselves. But it's so hard to keep that in mind every single day when you're looking in the mirror and you're taking in all of this information and societal standards and people telling you that you should look a certain way as you age. We're offered 100 different ways of how to stay young, but we're also demonized if we go too far. You see the celebrities who've had a lot of work and they look young, but then suddenly they tip over the balance and they're the worst person in the world because they've gone too far in this search for eternal youth. It's really confusing. And I'm confused. I'm trying to work out whether these beauty pressures are just ridiculous and I should ignore them, whether I'm a bad feminist if I do decide to go for more anti-aging treatments, whether I should just block it all out and live in my body and accept it the way that it is aging. And I know I'm not alone in this because I'm having loads of these conversations. And when I thought about this conversation, somebody sprung to mind that I was like, I have to speak to her. And that was Lisa. Lisa and I met at a networking breakfast. I don't really know how, but we got into talking about anti-aging pretty instantly, talking about treatments that were going on, you know, the different pressures. So when this topic really came to the forefront for me and I was like, God, we have to talk about this on the podcast, she was the first person that I thought of. She's warm and she's radiant and she's the co-owner of Big in Hackney. It's a beauty store that does loads of really lovely products and they're all rooted in being environmentally conscious. They take a really holistic view of skincare, which I think is interesting. It's not just about, you know, products, it's also really thinking about the health of your body and how that impacts the way that you look. In this episode, we talk about the emotions of beauty. We talk about aging and how it feels with the societal pressures. We talk about the dark side of Botox and what it means when the very thing that connects us all, our faces and our emotions, start to freeze. If you're feeling caught between loving who you are and wishing that you could freeze time or look a certain way, then this one's for you. Let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Lisa, welcome to the beige couch.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'm excited to have you here.
Yes, I'm so excited to be here. And thank you for telling me to not wear beige.
Yes, otherwise you do blend in to the walls, the floors, the sofa. We met in quite a random way.
Yeah, we did. At the Stack World. Yeah, exactly.
Stack World talk, which I'm a big fan of for anyone listening. Stack World is amazing. Go check it out. It's like career sessions and breakfast and all that stuff. And you meet loads of interesting people like yourself.
Yeah, it was the people I met that has been the different. I've been part of the Stack World for years, but never went to an event.
Oh, really?
Yeah, exactly. And that was the first one I went to because it was a talk by Joanna Elner, who's a founder of one of the brands that we stock at our store. And then I met you. So it was a beautiful morning.
Yeah. And I think I might have been going off to go and do something to my face, or that was the conversation at the table. And we started talking about beauty. And then, of course, you have a beauty store. Do you call it a beauty store? What do you call it?
Yeah, it is a beauty store. It is. It's a sort of hybrid retail and therapy space in Hackney that we opened 2 years ago called Big Beauty. It was originally called Big Karma, which was a take on Big Pharma, because we just can't, I got to the point where, I mean, living in Hackney, anyone lives in Hackney, you've got just zero options for beauty. You know, you've got, you know, now you've got Heckles, but you had Aesop on Broadway Market, and then you have nothing to like the John Lewis Beauty Hall in Stratford Westfield. And all the way to like the closest space in K was like, you know, Liverpool Street or something like that. And just Hackney was just this void.
A void of beauty.
It was so weird. And do you know what? I wasn't having it. So that was like, that was one part that kind of really led me to start the store. But, you know, the other thing was just like coming off, it's like coming off the back of COVID. My background is in advertising. It was influencer marketing and tech. And I just came off the back of COVID, and I think I spent all my money during COVID on beauty products. I think I was spending so much time on Zoom, staring at my face in like 2D. And I just always, it was like that sort of accessible luxury, like a little £20 this, a little £30 that. I didn't focus on clothes or anything because that was like not the expression of self or creativity. It was always makeup and skincare and things that smelled lovely and made me feel beautiful. And I was obviously, like a lot of people, also spending a lot of time on social media, diagnosing things to my skin that just weren't necessary. Like why I needed vitamin C, why I needed niacinamide, like researching all these ingredients. And like, I just got so deep on it all. And I think when we kind of got out of that lockdown space, I was like, oh, I've actually really been missing being able to have a conversation with someone who is also able to look at my skin and take me out of a self analyzing space. And that's when the whole, you know, realizing there was nothing around me, nothing in my immediate community that could play that role of like big sister, you know, like no one to be like, babe, you don't need that. Like just wear an SPF or like do less was a real thing that I needed to be told. You know, my skin was just so aggravated. And so that was a real kind of reason for going like, there's definitely need for this. I think as a counter to all of that online shopping, all of that self-diagnosing, all of that kind of culture of immediate consumption and beauty that was going on with too much, you know, social media usage, was trying to slow down the pace of that self-analytical perspective and just provide something else into the world that was, yeah, just like an objective. You know, your friend's older sister that's like, hunt. And that's what we've tried to do.
It's like that person who told you at one point, like, stop using that scrub. Was it St. Ives scrub? Yeah. It was like, eventually people were like, you should stop using it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, fine. That's useful to know. I think I'd totally forgotten about like the Zoom boom of COVID because it was, for so many women, it was such a weird place. And for me as well, like I had gone from wearing makeup every single day in my work. Like I personally would never have gone to work without makeup.
Yeah, neither.
And then I was, at the beginning of COVID, I was putting makeup on to go on Zoom. And I was like, yeah, well this, I didn't even think about it. I was like, of course this is normal. Yeah. And then the longer it went on, I was like, oh God, I really can't be bothered to do this. So then I started doing a filter, which I'm like, oh my God, I'm actually embarrassed now to say it, but I used to use like a filter on my Zoom.
Yeah.
And then I did a whole contract because I'm a consultant, did a whole contract with this filter. And at the end, I met them in real life. And it was only like literally the morning of, I was like, oh my God, they've only seen me with like glowing skin, and big lips and like ginormous eyes, like a cartoon doll. And I suddenly was like, oh, they're going to see me in person and be like, wait a minute.
No.
What's happened?
But it is distorting, you know,
completely.
As is like, you know, I mean, this is very linked to kind of what we were talking about when we first met around cosmetic procedures and how we're looking at ourselves, but we're not meant to look at ourselves in a front-facing camera. And the computer camera versus the phone camera, you know, it looks so different when someone takes a photo of us than when we take a selfie. Mm. And when you also then upload that selfie and then doctor it with even just a basic filter, let alone what some people are doing with Facetune or, you know, the editing suites in apps, it's not a real representation of how we look. Mm. And it definitely not how other people see us. You know, everyone else sees us in 3D, moving and, you know, full of expression.
Yeah.
And we see ourselves sort of in this pose we've found that pleases us, you know, that one, I know, that we hit.
Mine's like three quarter, for anyone watching, mine's like this. Because if I go too much to the side, it's like the jaw goes straight on. It's just a bit intense. I'm always like,
Well, we always joke about this when people get married, you know, like women always practice like so specifically, like, you know, the tongue to the roof of the mouth and all these things. And then you get wedding photos back and you're like double chin laughing, you know, like, because you can't help yourself.
That's so true. Yeah. I was very much like, do soft smiles when I get mine back and it's all teeth. It's like.
Exactly.
It's a lot.
As it should be.
As it should be. And yeah, it's exactly that of looking at yourself too much. And I guess with social media, there's so much information, but I guess from your perspective, probably a lot of disinformation.
Totally. It's just overwhelm. You know, that's the hard thing is like, we've got, you've got the best of the world in that you can find out and have access to absolutely anything now. But there's such opportunity for arbitrage, you know, for people to, take advantage of insecurities, of the fact that you've put certain searches into the world and then you get targeted with more of sort of information. Maybe you acted upon an insecurity in a moment and then you're bombarded with messaging about how to fix that. Mm. It's just a really confronting space, and it's just something that, you know, we need heightened awareness of, that that's kind of, that's just one part of the world. And there are other times when maybe we're not on our phones or we're not in the mirror at night under these certain lights, whatever, where we're not that self-critical. And that's those spaces are equally as valid, I think, on how we should look at our own beauty. But I think they're quieter. Mm. And so we don't focus in on those, that there are times where we just are feeling great. And it's, you know, it's only when we go deep on, like, I don't know, catching a reflection or seeing something that's triggered something in you that, yeah, it can spiral into, I need to change something. Mm. I need this. I'm lacking this. But that's always been the beauty industry. Even when it was watching commercials on TV back in the day.
Completely. And it's even the language of like need, I think, is so interesting. Like we asked out to people on the Instagram of points of view around Botox and things. And that language of need really came back, like, oh, I'll do it when I need it, or like, I don't feel I need it now, or I do need it because I have this. And it's like, when you think about it, the ingrained, like how well they've ingrained into us that this is something that is, it's not a luxury or a, you know, a choice. It's something that you need and you should be doing is terrifying.
Yeah. And it comes with accessibility. I mean, I think a lot of the time we looked at celebrities, you know, who are the beauty role models and who are getting the huge contracts, the L'Oreal, you know, back in the day, the big Estee Lauder contracts that were billboards and TV commercials and magazine covers. And there was a level of, unattainability, because those women could afford procedures that probably as well that we couldn't. And there was maybe a distance. I remember sort of growing up, there'd be a distance I'd put between, you know, myself and go, well, there's Photoshop involved. You know, there's an editing team behind that to make that woman look that beautiful. So already that's not real. And then there was this second thing of going, it's also not real because, yeah, they're in a league of, you know, sad, but competition in Hollywood or whatever that makes them feel they have to look a certain way, have their access to the best surgeons and whatever. But now it's lawless and anyone, you know, you don't need any kind of license. There's no regulation around opening an aesthetics clinic in the UK. The only rule is you can't give Botox to someone under 18. But beyond that, anyone can, you know, can do it. And there's things that are promoted as nice to have and, you know, kind of good certifications to show. But typically it's really unregulated and they're obviously trying to do a lot to change that. But when things are essentially that accessible and now 18-year-olds are, you know, going and getting little tweaks and fillers, and I think it's just changed the game to go, well, maybe beauty is more attainable, and things like Instagram have enabled that, kind of bringing Hollywood like closer and closer to the everyday woman. And yeah, I think it's just become more distorted. You know, back, you know, it used to be like, that's not achievable, it's not real, and it's not something to want to attain.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh, but every woman I seem to talk to is attaining this to some level, and should I?
It feels like even you become a little bit silly or naive for not doing it because it's so attainable. It's like, well, why would you not? And then the level, I always say to friends that, like, I probably, I wouldn't do anything if I didn't go on social media and if I wasn't surrounded by like very beautiful people who also do have tweakments. Like if I was just sat in my room, I would never ever think to myself like, oh, I want to put a needle here or do this and do that. But it's all comparative. And when I thought about that to myself, I was like, that's a really sad situation to be in, that like you'd put yourself in all kinds of different procedures that can have risks and, you know, can be really detrimental solely because of how you contextualize to other people.
Yeah, totally. I don't know who we're competing with. Like, I don't know where that ends, really. It's a really difficult conversation to get into because, you know, I firmly believe that when it comes to beauty and when it comes to self-expression and when it comes to aging, that everyone should have the freedom to kind of approach that however it makes sense for them. Mm-hmm. And also emotionally, physically, everyone's at different stages. So it's really hard. We get asked a lot, like, do we have a stance on anything? And we obviously have to have a stance on something because we either would or wouldn't offer a certain treatment. But when it comes to, like, you know, how women want to approach things, it's a completely open, judgment-free space. I think when I look at things, like, just for myself, and this is not talking for our business, I always think, could I tolerate the risk of it going badly? No, I don't think I could actually handle something going badly. And I also don't think personally, like, the jury is out on whether something is really safe. Or, like, you know, I feel like now I actually look at some celebrities, like, I think of Madonna, Simon Cowell, David Beckham. I go, again, with all the money, all the access, something's not right. And I worry that while something might look good once or twice in, you know, in your youth, where does it go? And what if, you know, what started as a, you know, 1 mil of this turns into a bit more and a bit, you know. I have a lot of friends who are aestheticians, is how you say it. Yeah. And some have come from a medical background and do it on the side to supplement the fact that they're not able to make enough as GPs. Mm-hmm. And then you've got people who are more kind of cosmetic therapists who have gone into aesthetics. You know, I have friends who will turn patients away and say, like, you're just too young. Like, you don't need to do this. I'm not willing to do it. And one of my girlfriends, who is a doctor and has started doing aesthetic work to patients, had a young woman say, well, you have to. She said, well, no, I don't have to. I can't. You know, she was like, well, I'm here and I'm paying, so you have to do what I'm asking. She's like, I won't do that to your face. And kind of got into this altercation with this young woman, which she found really confronting. But she sort of said it really helped her dig down and realize, like, no, I've got to have even myself a certain philosophy around what is too much, too far. And but she's like, that's really difficult because that's also putting my own, you know, feelings and opinions into someone else, which, yeah, it's just, it always throws out these moral conversations. But then, you know, you get from other sides, you go and, you know, you hear stories of people saying, well, I think maybe next time we could do this and next time you could try this. And for me, I think this is where the personal, like, I'm not willing to give anything a go at this point in my life, is because I hear so many stories of, I did, you know, I had some Botox here, and then what happened was I ended up sort of developing like a jowl as a counterbalance to this part of my face being, you know, paralyzed, you know, and you just, maybe I just remember the horror stories more, or I kind of are tapping into those more. And maybe because they're the ones that are spoken about, you know, maybe there are women who are getting Botox done in such a subtle way that, and, you know, we talked about this before, that there's shame or judgment attached to it, that women aren't forthright about the fact that they have got Botox. And so the conversation is distorted as well. I find it really difficult to find my opinion, like a really, like, defined opinion about what I would do for myself. And I think that's why this conversation's interesting, is because it's never ending. One day you'll be like, would I? The next day, absolutely not. The next day, oh, but it's not really that big a deal. And then, you know, and it just, you keep finding this, yeah, this rattling monkey mind going on and on about it, constantly triggered by external forces, be it, you know, female friendships, be it social media, be it media in general. It's just, it's a very overwhelming topic, I think, for women.
I think that that point around like different practitioners is so important, because I saw a dermatologist. I like have historically suffered with really bad acne and saw a dermatologist, and I kind of said to her like, oh, should I be doing Botox? And I was probably 26 maybe when I mentioned that, and she said like, don't do it until you've got resting lines when your face isn't moving. That's when you can start thinking about it. And I said, oh, what about preventative Botox? And she literally put her like her things down and just said like, preventative Botox is a marketing ploy. She said, preventative Botox, it doesn't make any sense. You don't need to paralyze the muscles when they're not causing any like changes in your face in terms of wrinkles. So the only reason people do that is just similar to baby Botox. It's a palatable way to give women the fear and the cure for the fear without being like, oh, you've done Botox, which has, you know, I guess inherently some judgment around it. And for me, that was so interesting. And, you know, I, to share my kind of story so far, I did Botox once after, well, I've done it twice. I did it once after my 30th birthday because I was starting to get lines, and I kind of was thinking, okay, you know, my friends are starting to get it. Maybe this is like the time and it will stop me aging. And I did it once, and I didn't it didn't sit well with me. I got super self-conscious that my face wasn't moving. I felt like, people were looking at me and could tell my face didn't move. And I mean, I...
Probably not the case.
Probably not. And you know, I didn't even get like, I didn't get full freezing or anything. And I kind of like let it wear off. And then again, also for me, it kind of wore off quite quickly. I think if you have a fast metabolism, you do lots of sports, it can help.
Yeah, like, all sorts of things. Too many saunas. Too many facials. Yeah. Things like that can break it down.
Exactly. Faster. And I was looking at that and like, oh God, well, you know, it's expensive. But what was interesting is when my face then returned back to normal, I felt way uglier and wrinklier than I ever did before, because I suddenly was looking and I was like, oh, now I'm really looking at the wrinkles and things. And it took me such a long time to kind of get over that. And then stupidly,
Made you stop going back at that point?
It was just that one time. And I think it was the self-consciousness about like not my face not moving. Yeah. And my husband also said like, oh, you're, you know, the lines around your eyes are different. He was like, it's not worse. It's just like, it's different. It doesn't look like your smile. Oh. And then I went and did it again before my wedding. I don't know why I did it. Like a year and a half later. I think, again, I just wanted to look like obviously my best for my wedding. And that was my view. And same thing. I was like, I've done it again. And I was really self-conscious and thinking like, oh, what if my face isn't like as expressive in my wedding pictures? Luckily, I have a massively expressive mouth. It's really, it can be that slippery slope of, I've had friends who've gone to injectors for, you know, Botox, and they've gone, have you ever thought about having your lips done? Have you ever thought about putting a little bit in your chin?
Horrible.
I know. And
you're honestly already so vulnerable as well.
It should be illegal. I honestly think you shouldn't be able to proactively suggest cosmetic surgery to people. I think you should be able to respond to their interests and their wants. But to proactively suggest something when they haven't mentioned it, and it's like, that's how you literally build a complex in someone, and they start thinking like, oh, I've got tiny lips or a small chin or whatever.
I mean, that's why it's like, I think it's Botox alone is worth like $5 billion already as an industry. I think they say in like the next 5-6 years it's going to be double that, maybe more. And you know, you do worry when there's such healthy profits in that kind of business, that there's a repeatable, steady flow of business, that there's a balance. I often say the same thing about therapy sometimes. You know what I mean? Where it's like people go to therapy and they can be addressing an amazing, you know, challenge in their life and get through it. But then, you know, maybe a therapist is like, have you thought about this? And you're like, oh, here we go.
You're like, I didn't want to open that can of worms, actually.
Buy another 10-pack. But, you know, it can feel like that. And I think it's just what's something I try and focus on a lot is building that self-awareness. You know, like I feel that you touched on that then. You have this, obviously you have that self-consciousness of, do people think I look different now that I've had this? But when you didn't have it, you're like, well, now these other insecurities are propping up for me. And, you know, it's just about like observing those things, you know, why you're feeling insecure. Like I wonder like in my 20s, like, did I have all these lines as well? I just didn't look in the mirror with that level of analysis. Was it because the conversation amongst my peers wasn't about this, which, you know, I fear for women in their late teens, early 20s now is. Just spent my Easter with an 11-year-old talking her off a ledge about retinols.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, if you're not getting this and that from Sephora for your birthday, you know. And so we were like role-playing different things just, you know, to say to her peers and like trying to educate her so she felt really like, you know, confident to say, I think I'll probably do that, you know, later on, but right now. And, it, you know, just education, you know, because all of these external factors create our reality. They are real. You know, it is real. If like when I open my phone, it's like this. And when I talk to my friends, it's like this. But I think we know as well the way social media works. Like if our phones dwell next to each other for too long on the same Wi-Fi network, we're going to get hit with the same ads and the same content. Mm-hmm. You know, that's literally what Facebook does. And so it's a self-reinforcing, you know, thing. And if we're all kind of going down one track, this thing keeps reinforcing itself and it's going to be really hard to break away from and until, you know, something happens and the culture moves and society moves away and we are all like, whoa, that was a weird moment, you know, like, you know, similar to how we looked at maybe anorexia culture, you know, in the 90s, early noughties, you know, and we look back now and we're like, whoa, I was reading an article recently about bodycon dresses and like whether or not they're going to ever come back because,
you know, pray to the Lord they never do.
Because the fashion seems to be quite appropriate now. Like everyone seems kind of comfortable, you know, in all sorts of shapes and sizes and looks. Culture moves and times change and it can be really hard to step away and go, is this forever? Is this right now? What are the things that keep reinforcing this messaging to me? And are there alternatives? Because I think something I'm really interested in more and more, especially as I get older, is just the yin and yang of life and the sort of balancing forces. And I find the conversation about tweakments and Botox and fillers to be very sort of sitting in the masculine energy. It's very results driven. It's very structured. It's very, you know, there's a very clear sort of doctrine about what looks good and what doesn't from a Western society's opinion about what is beautiful. And it's very dogmatic. Whereas I think when you look at, you know, more feminine energy around beauty, that's about rest and it's about nurturing. It's probably about inner wellness. It's probably about creativity and expression. And it's very different influence. Women go through so many chapters of, but you know, physical and emotional expressions of self, that it's kind of hard to have like a sweeping opinion on what you should do, you know, in your life or a stance on something because these things change. They change in your teen years, your 20s, your, you know, fertility years, your post-fertility, you know, all these things. And we know that like Western medicine is just completely lacking in women's health studies and representation of women as even doctors and researchers. And I think then there's a lot to say then for more holistic or more ancient practices that have represented women better historically. And I just always try to find the balance of information. There's another quieter, probably longer term, slower results kind of pathway that can also be explored. But, you know, it just takes more work sometimes, or it takes more patience.
I think it's really interesting to thinking about who's benefiting from these insecurities and these like projected fears onto women or who make a lot of these things. I mean, I read some data that in the US, the average millennial spends $2,600 on beauty treatments and products every single year. $2,600. And if you think of the average salary in the US, that's probably like 1 month of, you know, the kind of the average salary. It goes to about 2,000 for Gen Z. They spend 2,000 a year on beauty treatments and beauty products. And guess how much men spend a year on average?
Oh, I don't know.
It's $160. $160.
Oh my God. We're 20 times the amount.
It's bizarre. And then, you know, that's something that I always get a bit of a kind of bee in my bonnet about is like the I guess, the feminist angle of doing all these things and who's really profiting from them and who's creating them. Because I don't, I know that if women, you know, a woman who loves themselves, you cannot market to them. They're not profitable. The best state for women to be in from a capitalist point of view is like insecure about their skin. They're spending on Botox and beauty. Yeah. Insecure about their weight. They're going to a gym. They're doing this. They're eating whatever. Yeah. Insecure about the way they dress so that you can market them clothes. Like, I think thinking about the ecosystem financially that we sit in, and who's really benefiting at the end of the day.
Yeah, they need you to feel isolated, lonely, and also unsupported. And myself and my business partner, Marijke, we very much feel there was space to provide the counterculture to that. And, you know, we obviously do it in the way that we provide community. We have a lot of community-driven events that are education-based, that are about, I mean, typically to this point, they're all about non-invasive treatments. It's about facial massage, or it's about naturally derived ingredients. It's about learning, you know, the background in how products are made, speaking to founders directly, just kind of getting more cut through of information that might be useful for women. Every single brand that we've selected as part of our curation has been a for good profit brand. You know, they are sustainable through and through. They are design focused, and they think like completely from the whole way through their supply chain, through how they market, about the integrity of their brand. And what I was finding was when you put a brand, you know, like Vireo, like Votary, you put those brands up against brands that have much bigger marketing budgets, that have a celebrity influencer as the founder, that have, you know, huge margins because the packaging is in cheap plastic and whatever, whatever. They can't compete in those spaces. It's like there are some amazing brands that aren't celebrity founded, you know, that are founded by people who had a real interest in like either the certain ingredients or how to create a clean product, you know. And so we wanted to kind of strip all those brands out of that space and let them exist on their own and just see if we could provide, again, like a different experience of beauty, both for the brands and for the consumers, when it's not like, you know, paying for an email marketing campaign or certain social media posts, like when we're trying to not actively sell.
Yeah.
Like, what does that look like? And I think what's difficult for those brands and also for us as a space is like, it is less profitable. Like it is. That's the way that both brands and retailers, you know, make money is the retailers know the brands have enough margin to pay for all the marketing work. And then they force them to do that in order to compete with the brands in and amongst that consortium, because those brands have no other option. You know, if you're not in Space NK or now maybe Sephora, like, where are you as a beauty brand in the UK?
Yeah.
Like, you've got to be in those spaces if you want any sense of scale and access and probably cult beauty. And so, yeah, we're kind of just trying to push like a different type of model and understand where just the counterculture is in beauty. You know, you don't have to constantly be pushing certain messages and, you know, samples of products, and actually that can sometimes be counterintuitive to growth and to education and to building loyalty. So sort of, again, in that feminine energy, there's a softer space where you can actually draw people in without preying on fears and insecurities and have a different kind of conversation, because there is a consumer, like you said, where there are secure women who can't be marketed to, but still have an interest in wellness and still have an interest in how they're aging and still have an interest in, you know, how they present themselves, how they make themselves feel beautiful, how they make themselves feel, you know, presented to the world. And
definitely. I mean, the economic, you know, with all of these things, it's like follow the money and look at the economic structures and how businesses need you to act in order to sell. And I think my, I guess, kind of hot take that I've thought about recently with all of this is that it does all come down to finances often. Like, that is the reality. There's like that ongoing joke of like, you're not ugly, you're just broke. And, you know, there's memes of it, and they do it with all celebrities. It's like they weren't ugly, they were broke, and suddenly they look amazing. And I think my belief is that regardless of what we, the muggles, do in our day-to-day life,
yeah.
there will always be these women generally and men who will age fantastically because they have access to like unbelievable products and treatments. And I think I kind of feel like maybe there'll be a real divergence at some point of you've got like people maybe perhaps in London, I think we saw treatments have gone up by 67% from 2020 to 2023.
Yeah.
So that's the people having, you know, small invasive like Botox or fillers gone up by 67%. So people are trialing this stuff, but the people who are setting the trends will always be unattainable. When you have a Kim Kardashian, they're doing, you know, RNA infusions, which is like a DNA treatment, or they're doing like lasers every single week.
Yeah, completely.
It's like you have to think about where as an individual you want to benchmark what you're willing to buy into, because as you said, we feel like it's more attainable. I personally don't believe it's more attainable in a way, but it's like it's never going to be that level of who you see every single day on the internet.
But that's the thing, is like, that's why we need to encourage best we can honest conversations with our peers, because that celebrity world should always be taken with a grain of salt. But if you're then surrounded by peers who feel that it is attainable and that we all can and that we all should or whatever, or even women who have lost the understanding of really how disconnected we are from our bodies, who aren't aware that they're making a decision from a place of insecurity or whatever it might be, then we end up just like gaslighting ourselves. You know, we end up in this sort of really warped reality, which is, you know, it's just not one I want to be in. You know, I don't want to be in a space where any of my friends feel that they can't be honest because there's judgment or shame around, you know, trialing certain procedures or things like that. That's like, that is my worst case scenario. So I think, you know, number one, it's, you know, how do we remove any of those feelings so that we can all have, yeah, just genuine, honest conversations about what's going on. Because so many people, they lie, they hide things. The one you always hear now is like, you know, I got it for therapeutic reasons, or I wonder how we can break those stigmas around it, because this is sort of one thing we spoke about so much, is like there's so much judgment around getting, you know, work done. I don't know if we should call it work, but and it's like, why? And there was a really amazing article actually last weekend in, I think it was in the FT magazine, about, you know, this woman who was like, I'm in my 40s now, and for some reason I've always drawn the line at Botox and I don't know why. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I just don't know why that's the line. I'm happy to do laser and I'm happy to do this microneedling and radio frequency facials and all this, but I draw the line at injectables, but I'll do acupuncture, but it's just because a lot of these things get loaded with stigma. And again, as with anything, these industries blow up because of fear. And if we feel like we can't even talk about it with our friends, I think that's a really big issue. Way bigger than getting anything, you're trialing anything or having, you know, it regularly. Mm-hmm. If you can't talk to your friends about it, I think that's something we need to kind of check with ourselves.
For sure. It's interesting, that thing, because I more recently feel like I've landed at a similar place to the person in that article.
Right.
Of like, I've done some like polynucleotide things because I was like, well, it's like derived from a natural thing. And I understand in my head, I'm like, well, Botox is derived from a natural source as well. But for me, and this is, I kind of think we spoke about this when we first met. For me, it's the not being able to express in the same way. I think that as women, we have fought for the right. And I know this will turn some people off, but I feel like we fought for the right to be angry and to be seen and to not be put in a corner and like infantilized. And, you know, you're just a pretty thing, stand there and look good. Like for me, I want someone to see rage on my face when I'm angry. I want like my friends to see the little twitch in my eye before I'm about to cry. Like I want that because I think that's so crucial that we've worked really hard for. And also I read into the data, my background psychology, and I did a lot in neuroscience. And there's this interesting thing called mirror neurons, which is essentially like when I smile, your brain reacts as if you were smiling. So your neurons in your brain mirror the neurons in my brain.
Oh, wow.
Which is why when you see someone get like kicked in the leg, you go like, oh, as if you felt it. It's because of mirror neurons. And they're a massively important thing in understanding emotion. So when, if I frown like this and I'm about to cry, the reason you'd feel empathy is because of your mirror neurons.
Yeah.
And I was reading into it because I was like, wait, well, what does this mean? Like if your face doesn't move in the same way. And there's lots of data that shows that when you have like a heavy amount of Botox for a sustained period of time, you actually lose some comprehension of emotions.
Wow, yeah.
They did a study where they showed that people who regularly had Botox, they take longer to process emotional context in sentences. So they couldn't detect the emotional language of like anger in a conversation as quickly as someone who didn't.
Wow.
And that hit me and I thought, what does that mean if you have kids and what does it mean with your friendships?
Yeah.
Like, I got a bit tinfoil hat about it and was like, is this just another way of trying to like shut us all up and keep us calm?
Yeah. The term looks maxing, you know, the idea of, this sort of movement of the trad wife thing, you know, these all feel counter-feminist. They are also typically derived from male groups on the internet, and is information proliferated by men, which historically, without going too deep, like has been the case. Like if you look into folklore about like women, we were never seen as elderly. We were seen as elders, that we had wisdom, that we had, you know, a very specific role in society once we'd reached a certain age. Whereas, you know, our experience as women now is like for a certain period of our life, it's like, don't get pregnant, don't get pregnant, don't get pregnant, get pregnant right now. Don't age, don't age, don't age, don't, you know, it's like, that's just the whole thing. And it's like, why and who is that pleasing? And you kind of just kind of take it on the chin and roll with it and not question it. But when you do, you know, for me at this stage as well, I would like to be as expressive as I can be to my young children. You know, that is something in this era with young children that is, when I weigh up pros and cons, and it's not because I think I wouldn't be interested or my face couldn't, whatever. It's because when I weigh it up, that's the overriding pro. The overriding pro is that everything is felt, everything is expressed as it is in my family at this point. And that's why I talk about these eras and chapters, is because I think, you know, we've got to go with the flow as women. And you've got to, if you've, you know, done things and tried things and decided it's not for you for a little piece of time, that's cool. And if it's like something on your horizon that you want to try in a couple of years, like that's cool. Because there's so many things that happen that push us in different directions for different reasons. And I truly believe that it's just about keeping in touch, like as woo as it sounds, is keeping in touch with like what is going on for us.
Being
because
conscious.
Like that disconnected thing, that like not questioning why these messages are out there, why there's a movement towards more cosmetic procedures, why there's a movement towards a very specific beauty standard in our culture, not everywhere else. You know, like it's just such an echo chamber that we're in. I think we've just got to constantly like try and pull ourselves out and look for other references and bring other inspiration into our lives, because there is a role model for everything. And I think when we get really narrow, it's because our references have become really narrow as well.
And we see that with women, you know, like Pamela Anderson, like going to the award shows without makeup on, like those kind of things. And I've heard her speak about it. And, you know, she said it wasn't supposed to be this massive like stake in the ground, like I'm making a point. She was just like, I just didn't want to do it anymore. And I think like what you're saying is really powerful around thinking about it in eras and things change. Because what I hear a lot is people saying like, I don't want to regret not doing it. Like I don't want to be left behind. And when I think of that, I'm like, Botox wasn't a thing 20 years ago. And think how many beautiful, like Gillian Anderson, like all these, there's beautiful women out there who haven't had this since they were 20.
Yeah.
And guarantee by the time that we're 50, 60, even 80, Like, there will be something else. Like, if people, yeah. It's never a case of like, you have to freeze yourself in time now because otherwise you'll age and there's no clawing it back. Mm. It's also not true. Like, technology moves so fast. So lasers now are incredible. Even facelifts now, whilst they're really, you know, a heavy surgical procedure, now they look way better than they did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I think sometimes I want to just like hug everyone and be like, let's just pause on it. Take your time with it. Think about it. As you said, take advice from different places, sit with it with your friends.
Totally.
And don't hurry.
Exactly. Because that's that masculine energy again. That's that like, I want a quick result and I can and I'll book it. And it's just also instantaneous and also, you know, fast and results driven. And I think, yeah, there's so much beauty in some other approaches. And I would hate for something to be covered up in my health, for example, that I've been using a product to address a symptom when actually there's a root cause that needs to be addressed as well. Yes. And I think like us looking like holistically at wellness as we age is really, really important. And, you know, again, treating TMJ is one of those things. Like I would say since we opened big 2 years ago, we always thought, oh, I wonder what the kind of skin type will be that we're addressing. Like, are we going to get people that are really acneic or really dry or whatever? Every single person, it's a broken barrier. They've done too much to their skin. And everyone we meet with that are looking for treatments, whether it's bodywork, acupuncture, facials, everyone has like kind of leading to an autoimmune challenge or something that is like stress derived. It is all nervous system based. And again, this just comes back to that like lack of connection we have with self or overwhelm we're feeling. Like these are like pseudo psychological challenges that manifest themselves in physical ways on our face and in our body. And when we're feeling incredibly stressed and overwhelmed and we're tensing our jaw, and then we think, okay, I've heard that getting Botox can help freeze that. Mm. For me, that feels like absolutely, it probably will, and it will relieve you of jaw tension. Or we could address the stress and we could give you an amazing, you know, facial massage technique that can help support how you release that tension. And so when you are clenching your jaw, you're making the connection in your mind, oh, hold on, I'm clenching right now. I'm stressed. Something is affecting me. Because like you were saying about, you know, people who get regular Botox not being able to emotionally process things as well. Like that's that as well. Like what if we're living with chronic stress which manifests itself in our gut and in disease in our 40s and 50s because we've been masking? And like that's something I really worry about as well, is that these are kind of band-aid solutions that make us feel maybe superficially good. But underneath, there are some things that could be addressed, which take more work and take longer to address because it might be about booking yourself into some monthly acupuncture or even like a monthly massage where, you know, you're getting physical touch across the body, which really affects the parasympathetic nervous system. And then you're feeling better. And then it never manifests itself as TMJ and it never got you to the point where you're spending £300 every quarter.
And also I'm such a TMJ girl so badly. Like,
well,
and I considered doing Botox for it and then I was like, no, I need to do acupuncture.
We have a facialist in the store, Ksenia Silovanova, who's, for anyone on Instagram, follow her. It's The Moment Studio. And she's like a lymphatic drainage specialist and she brought out a book on facial massage, which she took us through a specific technique for TMJ, which is you hold your fingers like this and then you put them right in here, like into this, like relax your jaw and drop down and you're pushing right in and you can literally feel your jaw like releasing and pulling tension off your temples as well because it has this like direct link. And she was honestly, every single woman in the store when we were going through this facial massage was just like, you could feel this sense of calm just come over everybody. And it's such a simple thing just to be like sticking your fingers right in this part of your face and giving it a little wiggle. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, that's actually, even just taking that minute for myself in that moment where I felt it to release it has just done wonders for me. And there's just so many, yeah, there's so many other approaches we can have for these symptoms, but everything's like, it's a competition online for what message comes up trumps, isn't it?
Sure.
You know, and right now the solution for TMJ is like, just a little bit of baby Botox and it works, which, you know, and then people are like, results are amazing. They are.
Yeah.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
But
fair.
There are other pathways.
So I asked out to the audience, like, just how they're feeling around aging and beauty and some hot takes and thoughts. And there's a couple of really interesting ones in this. So one that I really loved was someone wrote in and said, many of my early beliefs were shaped by growing up in a culture that idolizes perfection, thinness, wealth, and Eurocentric features. Mm. I learned early on that beauty was a currency, but with an expiration date. Women aren't just expected to be beautiful, we're expected to stay frozen in time. But I had to learn to deconstruct those ideals in real time, to heal by choosing myself over and over again, because beauty without self-worth is just longing in a fancy dress.
What an angel follows you.
I was like, sorry, you're a poet. Like, yeah. Who's written this in? That beauty without self-worth is just longing in a fancy dress.
Oh,
I was like, that is so true.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it's yeah, that's incredibly concise, to be honest. Like, I think the goal for me with beauty is always about how I feel and how I look. And I think that's actually the case for everyone, but we get caught up on how it looks. I still, you know, as much of a natural clean beauty convert as I am, like every single day, always want to put makeup on because I love how it makes me feel. Mm. And how it makes you feel, that's the thing that will evolve over time as well. And she references that, like, it's like who are we competing with, and where does that go if you've competing with someone and you feel that you've attained it, then you find the next person, and like, you know, that's just, is that just making you feel like a winner, like powerful? Like what is it making you actually feel?
What are you chasing?
Yeah, what are you chasing? That's so fascinating. I can't believe she's written that in.
Yeah, with how it changes over time, I read this thing around that body dissatisfaction for women stays quite stable over your lifetime. So people will like pick up and critique things. But whilst dissatisfaction remains stable, appreciation grows with age.
Mm.
So there's two different axes of like, how satisfied are you with how you look versus how do you appreciate your body?
Yeah.
And in women, that metric does rise. So as you get older, you start to see your body as more of a, you know, a tool and something you're grateful for and you're preserving rather than just having to be this thing of beauty.
Totally. I think, you know, you don't often meet a woman in her 50s or 60s who won't tell you that the last decade of her life was the best as well, you know? And I think that's such a powerful thing to realize that as we age as well, things just get better and better. Whereas you hear so many, I think one of the scariest decades going into is your 30s for the question mark around fertility.
Mm.
You know, I think once women in general get beyond that decade, whatever that provides for them, whether it's, you know, good fortune, challenges, you know, answering the question of whether they do or don't want children, and society moving past that, like your peer group moving past that with you, it seems to open up this pretty amazing space, like beyond that. But you're right, like at this sort of 30s era, there's this junction of, yeah, just confusion and, you know, you're sometimes out of step with your immediate peers and things aren't all, you know, you kind of just feel like you're not all going at the same pace.
Yeah.
But I think there's some calm that comes after this that women return to that seems to be a very, very joyous space.
Well, I bloody hope so, because that's the whole podcast. It's true. Like, this decade's really confusing.
It's a tough one.
Okay, I'm going to finish up with a section that I call yes or mess, which is rapid fire questions.
Okay.
So yes is like, yes, you're into it. Mess, if you're like, no, put it in the bin. You can expand on them if you want to. People usually do. But number one is Facetune app.
Mess.
Fair. No explanation needed.
Mess.
Face yoga.
Yes, absolutely. Face yoga, facial massage, like these things, again, ancient technology in how, even just the awareness of how we hold our faces, like that's often what's creating laxity or certain lines. And, you know, you can still in general, you know, fully express yourself, but maybe like, for example, I just always have resting concern face and I don't need to. I don't need to furrow my brow constantly.
Mm.
So I try and keep awareness and just like relaxing my brow because I can still look interested in what people are saying without like, you know, the full scrunch. But yeah, face yoga, I think absolutely that's a yes.
Amazing. growing out your grey hair instead of dyeing it.
Live and let live. That's each to their own on that one.
Fair. The term aging gracefully.
Yes.
Yeah?
Big one. Yeah.
Nice. And celebrating our crow's feet.
Yes. I would say so.
I think.
I also think, again, we had them when we were 20.
Yes, I think so as well.
Yeah. I just don't think we noticed.
I also, honestly, when I look back at like me at 20, my skin is so much better now at nearly 33 than it was at 20.
Yeah.
Like without a doubt.
100%. But we would just focus on spots.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Now our skin's clear. We're like, is that lime?
Oh, so true.
Is that texture?
Because I've had such horrendous acne. Like for me, I'm always just like, I don't care about any of it as long as that never comes back.
Yeah, literally.
Like, it's fine.
Literally, I'm the
same.
Well,
thank you so much for being
here. Thanks for having me.
It was really good.
It was
great. I loved it. Good chat. And do you want to plug your socials for anyone who wants to?
Yes, we're at Big in Hackney. And there's always loads going on. I mean, all summer we have DJs on Saturdays. There's always like great events going on in the store. It's just a good vibe, actually. Victoria Park Village has become a really, really fun space to be on the weekend. So,
well, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.